My name is Mei Han. Today, I'm taking you behind the Great Wall to listen to China's long song, a song that has been sung for thousands of years.
Hi, I'm Patty Schmidt, and this is Inside the Music, a program that looks at the context of music, the how and the why, backgrounds, insights, and hidden histories, as well as documentaries and biographies that take you inside the music. Chances are you're holding or wearing something manufactured in the Middle Kingdom, China. Maybe it's even the radio or computer beside your ear. Simply put, a good deal of what we consume now comes from China. But what about music? How much do we know about the music that's made in China? Today you'll hear the first episode in a two-part series called China's Long Song. It's a journey into the roots of Chinese music. Our guide is the Vancouver musician and scholar, Mei Han, with additional narration from Vancouver music producer, Matthew McFarlane.
Vancouver is a city that looks west out onto the Pacific. It is a place that shares an ocean with China, and it knows it. Vancouver is Canada's most Asian city. From the glass condos of downtown to the malls of Richmond to the ancient Chinatown of the east side, Vancouver is increasingly made in China. Hundreds of thousands of Chinese have settled in the city, bringing with them their language, their food, and their culture. And along with them comes a musical history as rich and deep as the Western one we are so much more familiar with. Today, we'll explore the grounding of Chinese music. Our guide is one of China's musical treasures, the talented zheng player Mei Han. A child of the Cultural Revolution, an explorer of traditional Chinese music, Mei's experience and study plunge us into both the history and tradition as well as the future of Chinese music.
In the fall of 1978, a group of farmers in central China was digging a well. What they dug out was a 2,500-year-old tomb that was full of musical instruments. Among them, there was a set of chime bells, totaling 65 pieces and weighing 2.5 tons. These bells were in excellent condition. This set of chime bells was unearthed, with individual pitch names inscribed on the bells. Each of these 65 bells produces 2 pitches, one on the front and one on the side. As a musician, I was working in the musical ensemble associated with Chinese Army. So all the songs I played were kind of marching or political songs. I didn't know very much about traditional music. After the spell was found, I thought, wow, Chinese music really had that many different sounds and such a long history, and I knew nothing about it. And this urge just grew in me 10 years later. I finally couldn't sit there anymore. I went to school to study Chinese music history.
So what is it that makes Chinese music sound Chinese?
To find out, we have to go way back in history, as far as the 8th century BC, when instruments were made from a wide range of natural materials, and a system of categorizing musical instruments according to the material they were made of was created. This system is known as Bayin in Chinese, or 8 sounds. The Bayin system listed instruments made from skin, wood, metal, stone, clay, silk, gourd, and bamboo.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo.
Metal.
Metal refers to different types of bronze bells, gongs, and drums. In China, bells were made as early as 4,000 years ago. The technique and precision of making bells had reached a very high standard by the 7th century BC.
Casting bells was one of the most crucial tasks when a new dynasty was established. The ancient emperors believed that correct pitches on bells could result in benevolent governance, the harmonious society, and the balanced cosmos. For the same reason, bells made in the previous dynasty were considered to have incorrect pitches and bad cosmological combinations. To keep them would bring bad luck for the new dynasty. So the old ones were destroyed immediately and new ones were cast. This piece is played on brass jar harp, also known as juice harp. The instrument is plugged with thumb and first finger while placed in front of the player's mouth, which acts as a resonator. Jar harp is a folk instrument popular in minorities living in southwestern China, such as the Yi in Yunnan province. Yi people are famous for their love of dance. They have a dance called left foot. When dancing, people jump as high as possible and often turn dance into a competition. In the past, jar harp was used to pass messages between lovers. This piece is played by a 19 years old girl whose name is Ma Guoguo from Yi. And the piece is very unique and challenging because she holds and plays 4 harps at the same time.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo, stone, stone.
Stone instruments are chimes made of limestone, marble, or jade.
They are called qing in Chinese, and most qing have an L shape and with a little hole drilled at a corner. And usually a qing comes as a set to form a scale. The character for qing in the earliest known Chinese writing system describes the picture of a person playing the instrument. It has a hand holding a stick, a piece of stone with a handle, and the character for sound. It's very difficult to know how exactly Chinese music sounded, because the music has been constantly changing, and there was no notation left for the ancient music. But there is an oral tradition, and we have many historical documents that speak to the traditions and the theories. What we do know is that 2,000 years ago, the most preferable music was not for entertainment. It's for making you a better person and to help create harmony in society. Music was not meant to please your ears or your senses, just like colors are not meant to overwhelm your eyes, and food is not meant to indulge your taste buds. This is a Confucius philosophy.
Dutch scholar Van Gulik once described classical Chinese music as having a dual function, cosmological and political. He said, "Music belongs in heaven and corresponds to what is heavenly in man. It is a means for perfecting the government and improving the individual."
The theory that music belongs to heaven and corresponds to what is heavenly in man is based on two philosophical schools, Confucianism and Taoism. The great Confucius Kongzi lived between 551 and 479 BC. He was a thinker, philosopher, educator, and a great musician. He discussed it and exemplified the ways of behaving in society. He said, "Music is what arises from sound. Its roots lies in things touching man's heart. For this reason, he whose heart is touched with sorrow, his sound is exhausted and decaying. He whose heart is touched by happiness, his sound is spacious and leisurely. He whose heart is touched by anger, his sound is coarse and unyielding. He whose heart is touching by love, his sound is harmonious and gentle." He said, "For this reason, the former kings were cautious about what they played to the people. Thus, ritual was used to direct their wills. Music was used to harmonize their voices. Administration was used to unify their actions, and punishment was used to prevent their violations. So ancient Chinese music was a large part of the political system."
The shadows of China's past remained throughout the 20th century, although in different forms. Music was still used to harmonize the people's voices, as Confucius so delicately put it, to arouse their patriotism rather than express personal feelings. Their hearts, like the marble instruments, were supposed to be stone.
In 1980, as a professional musician working in an army ensemble, I was given 20 yuan a month allowance, which is about $3 Canadian at today's exchange rate. With all our savings,
My ex-husband and I bought a small stereo boombox, which was the most fashionable item of the time. One day, a friend gave us some cassette tapes, saying these were songs popular in Hong Kong and Taiwan. I was curious and put on one tape in the boombox. As I was listening, I experienced strange feelings. First of all, I thought, wow, what a sweet voice. Then I realized that I actually could understand the lyrics. Then I got goosebumps, because it was about love. And finally, I cried. This was a pop song, something I had never heard before in my whole life. This song was sung by Deng Lijun, the most famous 20th century pop star from Taiwan. I listened and cried. And I listened more and cried more for the whole night. It was only years later that I gradually understood the reason why these cheesy pop songs touched me so deeply. It's actually quite simple. I was looking for love. I don't remember my parents ever hugging me or telling me they loved me when I was a child. They never told me I was beautiful or supported me emotionally in any way. In the Chinese culture that I grew up in, expressing personal feelings or love for someone virtually did not exist. These pop songs simply started to reach my heart and began to tear down the wall that was built around it.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Clay. Clay.
Clay refers to the Chinese ocarina, which is made of pottery.
Most xun look like an egg, and with a mouth hole on top, and with a couple of finger holes in front, or the combination of front and back. Xun is one of the earliest Chinese instruments. The earliest xun found in China was from 6,000 years ago. And xun is a very portable instrument, but not many people play this instrument. In 1996, when I first arrived in Vancouver, I heard musician Randy Ringrouche had a large music collection. And 2 years later, I met Randy at UBC. And after we got to know each other a bit better, he invited me over to see his instrument collection. And I was amazed to see that he actually has so many Chinese instruments and even had a couple of xun. It was quite a shock. And I asked him, can you play it? No, of course. Then he just grabbed the xun and started playing. Well, I don't know. Maybe I fell in love with him at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Skin.
In China, skin refers to the contact of hand to animal skin. In other words, the drum.
There is a Chinese myth about the invention of drum. Long time ago, there was a creature who was half human being, half dragon or something, who had a long tail. And one day he struck his stomach with his own tail, and the sound was so loud that carried to 500 miles away, and that was the invention of drum. And drum has remained to be one of the most popular and important instruments. The fact that in the 2008 Olympic opening ceremony, China had chosen 2008 soldiers to play 2008 drums at the counting down of the ceremony just tells you how important the instrument is. And this Olympic game really opened the door to the world, and so many people went to China, not just to see the game, they went to the Great Wall, they visited the Tiananmen Square.
The Great Wall did not fulfill its initial purpose, to separate China from its northern and western neighbors. Instead, caravans of horses and camels brought trade goods, religion, art, and music from India, Persia, Arabia, Turkey, Mongolia, and even Europe. For centuries, a famous trade route, the Silk Road, allowed China to embrace and integrate many musical styles and instruments into its own music. This eventually led to the rich musical mosaic of Chang'an, now Xi'an, the capital of the Tang Dynasty.
This piece is called Qing Bei Yue from the 10th century. It would have been performed at the Tang court for entertainment, perhaps with some poetry. We're lucky to have it today because the score of this piece was concealed in the Dunhuang Cave on the Silk Road. It was only discovered in 1907. And this music is rarely played in China. Indeed, this performance comes from my ensemble Red Chamber, based in Vancouver.
I'm Patti Schmidt, and on Inside the Music, we're listening to part one of China's Long Song, a two-part documentary exploring the music of China. Your guides are Vancouver musician and scholar Mei Han and CBC music producer Matthew McFarlane.
At the close of the Tang Dynasty, China experienced several hundred years of war. Finally, the Mongol Empire and Kublai Khan conquered China and established the Yuan Dynasty in the 13th century. Beijing, for the first time in history, became the capital.
Even though the Mongol rulers adapted many cultural aspects of the Chinese Han, they did not seem to have a taste for court banquet music. Many court musicians were gradually dismissed, and some ended up settling in Buddhist temples. The music they brought from the court was preserved in temples and eventually became part of the Chinese Buddhist music, which is still being played daily for monks' meditation and for ritual ceremonies attended by the public. This is Buddhist music. This piece is called Xing Dao Zhang, or Movement for Practicing the Way. It is usually played at ceremonies for feeding the hungry ghosts and releasing them from the torments of hell. In 1790, to celebrate the 80th birthday of Emperor Qianlong of the Qing Dynasty, the court ordered four opera groups to play in Beijing. Their performance was such a big hit, so they were asked to stay in Beijing permanently to entertain the royal family and the opera class. Gradually, the groups mixed their styles and other styles and created what is known as Beijing Opera. Over the last 200 years, Beijing Opera has developed into an extremely sophisticated art form, which includes distinctive vocal stylings, fancy costumes, dramatic makeup, and difficult acrobatics. Beijing opera ensembles contains a small group of melodic instruments and a group of percussion instruments, with lots of gongs and cymbals, so it is loud. 100 years ago, the most popular venue for opera in Beijing was in the Dashla, a commercial district built in the 15th century. It's located south of Tiananmen Square. Dashla hosted numerous art stores, tea houses, restaurants, and theaters. In the old time, when the opera was on, the theaters bustled with all kinds of activities. The doors were left open, and the peddlers walked around inside the theater, selling cigarettes, watermelon seeds, and snacks. People chatted throughout the performance, and occasionally, someone in the balcony even shouted out for a hot towel, and the peddler would let the towel fly across many heads with remarkable accuracy. Even with all these noises, nothing on stage was ever missed, especially when an actor hit a high-sustained note. The audience would applaud and yelled out loud, "Hao," meaning bravo.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Wood.
Wood instruments were an important part of Confucius' ceremony. In fact, in the ancient time, one type of wood instrument marked the beginning of the ceremony, and another type marked the ending of the ceremony. However, because Confucius' ceremony disappeared in China a long time ago, these instruments do not exist anymore. However, there's another type of wood instrument called the 木鱼 in Chinese, meaning wood fish, because the shape of instrument almost like a fish head with two big eyes, it's two sound holes. And this is used widely in Buddhist temples around the world. And it functions as a beater, and that helps the prayer to concentrate when they're doing their meditation.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Gourd.
Not a Chinese instrument. You probably already identified this is an accordion, but its inspiration is Chinese. In 1777, the French missionary Pierre Amiel brought what you're hearing right now, the sheng, a type of Chinese mouth organ, to Europe, which inspired the invention of concertina, reed organ, harmonica, and accordion within 50 years. The sheng mouse organ is part of the gourd categorization in the eight sound system. Just imagine, if you wish, taking a wall of large church organ and shrinking it into thin bamboo pipes, and wrapping them into a gourd bowl and blowing into it. That's a sheng. Well, beside its unusual look, the sheng is also unique in that it makes sounds on both inhaling and exhaling. The player can play clusters of chords with very rich tone colors. And sheng is now very popular in China, like a saxophone in the West. When you play in an ensemble, you don't want to sit next to a sheng player because it can be loud and can be annoying sometimes. It's like sitting next to a bagpipe. And this music is from a different minority group, the Nu people. Nu is a very small group. They have less than 30,000 in population, and they live in the beautiful mountains surrounded by waterfalls. And what's unique about them is that they drink a lot of rice wine. Men, arm in arm, cheek to cheek, they simultaneously sip from the same bowl. The instrument is a free reed pipe called bilangdao or hulu si. It has a melody pipe and two drones producing from a gourd wind chamber. The player uses circular breathing to keep the drone going continuously. This simple folk instrument has become widely used in pop music in China, but also has found its way to musicians around the world. And you may occasionally hear it on the soundtracks to your favorite TV shows.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Bamboo.
The category of bamboo refers to wind instruments made of bamboo. One of them is the di or dize, a side-blown bamboo flute. Although bamboo flutes are prevalent in many cultures, the Chinese dize has an extra hole covered with a very thin piece of paper-like membrane taken from the inside of a hollow reed. This membrane gives the di a unique buzzing tone.
In the West, flute is a feminine instrument, but in China, dize is considered a man's instrument because in the old time, di was used in outdoor music, but women were considered housebound. That's why, to this date, you can hardly find any female dize players.
Metal, stone, clay, skin, silk, wood, gourd, bamboo. Silk. Silk.
There is one unbroken tradition in Chinese music, that is qin music. Qin is a 7-string fretless zither that has a shallow wooden box about 3 feet long and 1 foot wide. Unlike other stringed instruments, which stopped using silk strings in modern times, qin still uses silk strings.
This instrument carries the most important philosophy of Confucianism and Taoism. Taoism primarily addresses the relationship between man and nature. It describes how our interrelationship with nature affects our minds, bodies, energy, creativity, and even longevity. And while we are as individuals, we interact with nature, we are also essentially part of nature. As an instrument favored by scholars in the past, Qin represents the cultural achievements of China's early civilization. This is why Qin was the only featured instrument in the performance at the Olympic opening ceremony in Beijing. Qin music has a unique notation, and its philosophy has been documented continuously for over 2,000 years. The idea behind playing Qin is to purify a person's mind and soul, and to make connection with nature. In classical Chinese paintings, which can be easily found in a store in Chinatown, you will see a typical image of an intellectual practicing Qin. He's often portrayed as a long-bearded man sitting down at the top of mountains. He would be surrounded by rocks, waterfall, and pine or bamboo trees. The objects symbolize purity, nobility, and dignity. Playing Qin in this kind of environment helped people to reach the ultimate enlightenment. This is the last music played by Ji Kang, a famous scholar, lived in the 3rd century. Ji Kang had a very unusual characteristic. Most scholars back then considered getting a government position as a realistic goal of their study. But Ji Kang looked down upon all these ideas. He liked to write poetry and drink with his friends. When recommended for a government position, Ji Kang made all kinds of excuses not to accept it. For instance, he said, "Oh, I can't stand or sit still in court because I have fleas and it's itchy. I scratch all the time." In the meantime, he was very critical about the corruption of the court. This angered the emperor, and eventually the emperor ordered Ji Kang beheaded. Right before his execution, Ji Kang was allowed to see his family one last time. He showed no emotion and asked his brother, "Have you brought my Qin?" The brother said yes and handed over his instrument to him. Ji Kang sat down and tuned it. Then he started playing this melody called Guangling San, meaning great peace. When he finally finished, he lifted his head and looked far. He said, "Now Guangling San dies with me."
Then there's the pipa, We think of it as sounding quintessentially Chinese, which is true, but the pipa was brought to China from the Middle East along the Silk Road. Its origin is the oud, which is still one of the most important instruments of the Middle East.
Now, this is an instrument for women. It's zheng, a Chinese zither, and it's being played by a woman, me.
The zheng is a long wooden box with a number of strings on top. Today, it has at least 21 strings, but in ancient times, it only had 12 or 13.
Early Chinese texts described the shape of zheng as reflective of the universe, where the flat bottom symbolizes the earth, the arched top represents the heavens, and the 12 strings represents the numbers of months of a year. Today, millions of Chinese play this instrument, much like a piano in the West. Recently, in Beijing, to celebrate Olympic, more than 1,000 girls played together on the Great Wall. I first saw a zheng when I was 11 years old. I came from a family that has four children, and I'm the youngest. From as early as I can remember, I was often mocked by my family as being stupid. So I thought if somehow I could become famous, my family would respect me. I wanted to be a ballerina, but I was told my legs and neck were not long enough. And I wanted to be a child movie star then. I was told my face was too round for the screen. So at 11, the zheng seemed to be my last hope. But it turned out that the instrument has helped me to achieve more than I could have imagined. It is not fame. It helped me to learn the sense of beauty and peace. It also helped me to express myself through making music.
You've been listening to part one of China's Long Song, a two-part series that looks inside the Great Wall at the music of the world's rising power. Next week, the series examines the musical revolutions and evolutions of China's 20th century. China's Long Song was written and hosted by Mei Han and produced by Matthew McFarlane, with assistance from Kathleen Flaherty. For more information on this show, go to our website at cbc.ca/insidethemusic. Stay tuned for more great programming on CBC Radio 1 and 2. I'm Patty Schmidt, and this has been Inside the Music. Thanks for listening.